So as we get started, how would you describe survival mood?
Survival mode a lot of times comes down to your vision. You can't see beyond the immediate space that you're in. You can't see outside of your circumstances, and you're literally just trying to get through the day. And it's so important to be able to survive and transcend those times, to be able to have a broader vision, to be able to see more for yourself and more for your future so you can really start to live again instead of just trying to get by.
I love that. I love that. And I agree with your definition. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Letitia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause, breathe, come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I'm your host, Letitia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Natasha. Hi, Natasha. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm so excited to be here. My name is Natasha Ickes. I'm a mother of two amazing kids. I'm an entrepreneur. I've been a salon owner for 14 years now. I'm an author, all the different things, right? And I'm excited to be here with you all today.
I'm excited to have you. So tell us your story to and through survival mode.
Ooh, girl, yes. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to talk about, as you guys know, today's topic is teen violence. But for me, to really understand how I ended up in these situations, I had in many ways a beautiful childhood, but I also had a lot of pain. In my first suicide attempt, I was 8 years old. And my mom was in and out of my life, and my early relationships were really challenging. And I mean, even with my dad, and he was my primary caretaker, but I lived with him until about the end of middle school. And it was my first year with my grandmother, beginning of high school, when I had my first violent teen relationship. And I was with a boyfriend at the time, and we're 14 years old, right? We're at the house, we're talking about something stupid, get into an argument, and I tell him I don't want to be with him anymore. He walks into the kitchen and grabs a knife. And he stood there and he told me, If I can't have you, nobody can. And I remember just going cold, time slowed down, my hands started sweating, I was scared. And so I just started thinking, I'm like, okay, what can I do in this moment to de-escalate? So I was like, look, I'm sorry, I want to be with you. He was like, no, you don't, right? So after this back and forth, eventually I calmed him down and I hugged him. I told him I loved him. I wasn't going anywhere. He was crying, he was upset. He ended up putting the knife down and we started to watch a movie. Later on, he got up. I can't remember if he just walked into another room or went to the bathroom or whatever, but whatever happened, and I had a tiny bit of space, and I looked at the front door and I was like, I think it's unlocked. And I just bolted out the front door. So I'm running down the street. He's chasing me because he ends up coming out. He's chasing me. And thank God, some random stranger, you know, God sends us these angels. Some random stranger came and intervened, like, you were going to leave. And we're young, right? He was like, you're going to leave this young girl alone. I wish I could say that was the end of that one, but we went back and forth for a while after that. But eventually that relationship fizzled out. Now, I moved in with my mom for the first time since I was three the following year. I was 15. That's when I got into my next violent relationship. He was living with us. My mom and I just have a interesting past, right? We're great friends now, but it just was a very challenging upbringing. And quite frankly, it was really hard to have her as a mother because she just was not present and I did not feel loved. And it was really hard on me. Fast forward to I'm living in her house. He's living there. She doesn't even know it because we don't talk that much. And eventually we ended up moving out and moving with his dad. And we were fighting some in her house, but it really escalated when we were living on our own or living with his father. And his dad, I mean, there were times we'd be outside fighting and his dad would literally come out and try and stop it and he would threaten him too. And so his dad was really kind and wanted to help, but was scared. So eventually that relationship stopped. And I'm giving the cliff notes because I want to take you guys through four just very brief stories and they are going to tie together in the end and they're going to make a lot of sense. And so he eventually got caught up in some legal challenges, and that ended that relationship. Now, the next one wasn't even, so this is a third of the four. The next one, at this point, after him, I'm homeless. So I'm sleeping on buses, I'm sleeping in coffee shops. I have now bounced around so much. I didn't feel safe, I didn't feel loved, and I didn't want to go back with family. And I also was now scared to try and live with a boyfriend because of this experience. So, I was talking to this young man who I knew from church growing up together. And I mean, nothing between us, right? We'd never kissed, never anything physical, just literally young kids talking, right? And there's that dynamic. And at one point, we get into a little disagreement. I tell him that I don't want to talk to him anymore. He shows up. I was at a party that night and he knew where I was. He ends up showing up where I am and he says to me, I hope you're ready to die. And I had this moment of like, wait, what? Now, we don't even have a relationship. We've never done anything physical. I'm just like, where is this coming from? Long story short, my friend and I leave and we're walking down the street. And I look up, and at this point, I'm thinking, okay, you know, maybe everything's okay. He pulls up it with a car full of people. He's not the one driving, he's in the passenger seat, and he hangs the gun right out the window and he points it at us. He doesn't shoot it or fire it, but he does point it at us. And I grab my friend and we duck down. And we get up a few minutes later and we take off running down the side street. I'll never forget, there was this huge semi truck parked there that probably saved our lives. As we run up, the car pulls in front to cut us off. We run back, they back up. We run up, they drive forward. They eventually hit the corner and we're able to hide inside of this store until a friend came to save us. All of these I go into detail in my book, but very short version. Eventually, this man, so that was our only real incident. We didn't see each other again. We didn't even know each other well enough for him to like, I knew him from church, but he didn't know where I lived or anything like that. A couple years later, the mother of his child, they had separated. She was with a new guy. He hid outside of her house. Same thing. He had texted her this time and told her he was going to kill her. He hid outside of her house, waited for her and the boyfriend to come out. He shot and killed them both. Left their child. He went to jail. The mother has now passed. And that was such an eye-opener for me that this is not a game. Not that I ever thought it was fun, but that I've got to get a grip and figure out how I keep ending up in these situations because I could lose my life. And so, the very last, very short story that I'm going to tell you, it was a little different. But still a lack of boundaries. And it wasn't a physical violence. And at this point, I was a young woman. I was coming after, and there's a reason why I'm sharing this. I was coming after my first long-term relationship. We were together 5 years. We had a daughter. When we separated, I ended up with this man who was 15 years older. And he was just very controlling. He didn't hit me, but I would try and leave him and he would stalk me. I moved twice to get away from him. He would cut holes in my curtains so he could see in from outside. I had a shed in my backyard. He would climb on top of the shed so he could peek in. He knew how to break in through windows, so he would get into my home multiple times and just refuse to leave. I'm tall, I'm 5'7", but he's 6'4", so he still towered above me. And it was very intimidating. We had one physical altercation, but most of it was I was in absolute fear that this man is insane. And so the second time after I moved, he had again found out where I lived. I moved at like 11 at night, hoping he wouldn't know. He texted me my address the next day. At some point later, I'm in a new relationship. He breaks in the middle of the night and is standing over me and the guy that we were in the bed, right? This is nothing's happening. We're just asleep. And he breaks in and he's standing over us. And I realized like I could lose my life. And that was the last violent or deeply unhealthy relationship that I was in. But what I realized as I looked back was that these relationships continually came after a period of intense pain where I was looking for love in all of the wrong places. And I know you can share a lot on that. So I'm going to stop talking and let this be a conversation.
Well, thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing. And I was going to ask you what you thought the root cause was for you, because I think this is a conversation that we don't necessarily have often. I know for me, my relationship with my parents had been strained for many years before we introduce a man. And I spent years looking for the opportunity to be loved, seen, and understood in a way that I didn't feel loved, seen, and understood by my parents. They were both present, but not emotionally, not in the way that I needed them at that time. My story started with a molestation at 7, and because my relationship with my parents were It was odd back then. Both parents were settling into new relationships, which they were very focused on. And I think I was kind of like the, I don't know, collateral damage. Like they had to deal with me, but I don't think dealing with me as a child was easy, right? I was highly gifted, and as a result, I demanded to be challenged in ways that I don't think people understood in the 80s, right? So as a result, I found myself in spaces and with in spaces and places with people who really didn't have my best interests at heart. And I couldn't see that because my only focus at that time was to be seen, understood, and loved.
I think that is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And I think you touched on so many important things. I think for a lot of people who end up in these violent relationships, people often who have not been in them, they don't understand. And they're like, why don't you just leave? Or what's wrong with her? It's not what's wrong with her, it's what happened to her. And sometimes him, right? It's not always women that are abused, although normally, right? The numbers show it is more women, but whoever is being abused, it is what happened to them. And a lot of times when you don't experience love or your parents don't know how to show you love in a way that you can feel it and experience it and know it within you, you are looking for it other places. And I didn't even realize until I was much older and in therapy and journaling and doing the work that, oh, every single one of these violent and unhealthy relationships came right when I was desperate for love. And because I hadn't experienced it in the way that I needed to, I didn't understand a normal interaction. I needed somebody over the top, threatening to kill themselves or kill me if the relationship was over for me to feel like you cared. Because when instability is your norm, that's what feels normal to you, right? And so almost, it's almost like a healthy relationship is scary because your body and your nervous system is like, what is this? And so when you go back into that negative pattern that you're used to, it's like, oh, okay, I don't like it, but this feels normal. This feels like home.
Absolutely. And I think that's a very key point here, right? I think the reason why, not I think, I know the reason why a lot of us end up in multiple situations, even though we know are dangerous for us, it is because we are subconsciously wired to seek that type of situation. Our body gets chemically addicted to the chaos. And we
It's
then
true.
seek it.
It's true. Even the last one I was telling you about, he again, and it wasn't, we had one physical thing, and there were, I mean, times fighting over a gun, and you know, there were, it was very unhealthy and unsafe. However, just most of it was just verbal arguments. It was crossing of boundaries and lines that shouldn't have been there. And I remember telling him once, it seems like you like this because things are fine and you find a way to argue. And he admitted, he was like, I don't even know why, but I like to argue. I like to fight. And at least he realized that, you know, but I'm like, I do not. And I've been divorced for almost 3 years, but thank God with my ex-husband, we had our issues, right? Clearly, because we're not still married, but there was no violence. We just didn't have any of that because after that last one, I reached a point where this will no longer be my story. And because I recognized I had a history of being more vulnerable and reaching, not necessarily reaching for, but ending up in these unsafe relationships after I go through this period of like feeling unloved, feeling rejected, feeling like I failed in whatever relationship. I've now been single for over 2 years, completely celibate, completely single. I just was like, I need to take the time and the space to heal and to work on me before I navigate anything else.
And it's good that you recognize your patterns. Whenever I talk about accident survival mode, I say it happens in three phases. The first phase is self-awareness. Get into this place where you actually see why life looks the way it does, right? And until we get to that place, we are really just operating in darkness. And I like to liken awareness to a lighthouse. It gives us an opportunity to course correct when that light comes around and shines its light on our path. And in that course correction, we avoid some of our patterns resurfacing. We avoid a lot of the negative situations that we see, the chaos that we've often gotten used to. The second phase is a reprogramming, being able to challenge our narratives, challenging our conditioning, challenging our beliefs, challenging the way that we view ourselves, even, right? Because sometimes the emptiness that we are searching to feel starts with the narratives that we tell about ourselves. And then the third phase is a reprogramming, being able to lay down the survival identities that we often pick up, right? Like I talk a lot on this podcast about being a people pleaser. I spent many, many years doing things for people that my soul was crying no for. But because I had learned from my relationship with my father that if I didn't do what people wanted, there would be a consequence, I actively attempted to avoid that consequence. And that meant showing up in ways that wasn't aligned with myself, doing things that I didn't necessarily want to do, and really operating from a lack of boundaries. And one of the hardest things for me has been able to set boundaries and get clear on what it is that I actually want and not just doing just to tick a box or make somebody else comfortable. But in order for me to move into a space where I'm no longer in survival mode, I really had to lay down those identities and pick up something different. And that picking up something different really meant that I had to get clarity on what my values were and what I really wanted out of life and started committing to making sure that I was in alignment with that.
Absolutely. And boundaries is something that a lot of us struggle with, and the people pleasing as well. And I think it goes back to this constant need. It's so hard to heal those deep parental wounds, right? When you did not feel loved, it's hard. And really, the people that are supposed to love you the most, you're those foundational years, if they are not there and you're rejected in whatever way, it is hard to trust that anybody else will ever love you. And so you find yourself, at least I have found myself consistently. My therapist and I talk about boundaries all the time and my need to really get better with them, because I always feel like I, or have felt like I am not enough. And so I have to do more. I have to give more. I have to be more. I have to just go over the top in order for you to want me and in order for you to stay. And this isn't just like a relationship thing. This is friends. This is clients. This is just how I have my children, right? How I move through the world. And in some cases, like with your kids, it's beautiful. You want to give them everything you never had. But I remember a good friend of mine told me once, because it's too much to get into in this episode. But anyway, I have gone above and beyond in every way I can with my kids, which I very much appreciate. And I think has been a beautiful thing. But she told me once, she was like, you can never change the relationship you had with your mom. Like, you can't fix that with your children. It doesn't matter how much you do, that was that, and you have to heal that on your own. And that's it. And so that realization of that is something separate that I need to heal, and that nobody else can fix that for me. Nobody else can take the place of what I didn't have. And so I've got to work on loving myself enough to where I can set the boundaries, where I can honor my needs and my desires and my wants, and feel like if you're here, that's fine. And if you go, that's fine. And that was a journey that took me a while, and that in some ways I'm still on, but has given me so much freedom.
Yeah, our relationships with our parents are the foundation for everything. And oftentimes we find ourselves in relationships that mirror often the negative aspects of our parents that probably wounded us in some way, right? I always say, when I look at the man that I dated or married, I see so much commonality with my father, right? When I look at my relationships outside of my platonic relationships, what I see mirrors a lot of the relationship that I have with my mother. And they're two different things, right? My romantic relationships, I struggled very much with being able to self-advocate for myself because my relationship with my father told me or taught me that I didn't really have a voice, right? And my voice, as much as I knew existed, was often silenced by his tolerance of the things that I had to say. So it taught me to shut up in those environments, in those relationships, because I learned very early on that there would be consequences if I didn't. And how that translated for me in my relationships was not being able to self-advocate for myself, even in circumstances where I knew that the things that were happening were wrong. But I was so terrified of the consequence that I assumed would be tied to me advocating for myself, kept quiet, and I suffered for years as a result of that. Now, on the flip side of that, my relationship with my mom was very strained, but what that created for me was a disdain for women. So, where in my romantic relationships, I had no advocacy at all. In my platonic relationships, I had no patience for anything. And the minute you stepped out of line, the minute you did something that I didn't think was deemed right, you were cut off instantly. And if I had the same energy as I did in my platonic relationships, with my romantic relationships, I would have saved myself a lot of heartache. But it was very different, and it was the core of that was one was my father wound, the other one was my mother wound. And they show up very differently, even though it's the same sort of neglect. I had the same emotional neglect. Both of my parents chose their partner over me, but my reaction was vastly different. And I would still stay to this day, I still have problems with my platonic relationships. When I say I can cut somebody off at the snap of a hat, like never speak to you again. But I still have this, even in my healing, I still have this softness more so in my romantic relationships. And I can see it now that I have the tools to navigate it differently, but it definitely stems, both of them stem from my parents and my relationships. And interesting enough, I've been no contact with my father for almost 15 years at this point. And that was because I never got the ownership that I needed out of him. But my mom, on the other hand, was very, very quick to take ownership of how the relationship unfolded for us. And I needed that it for my healing. A lot of people are quick to say, oh, forgive, especially when it comes to your parents, right? The Bible says, honor thy father and thy mother. Like, you should be horrified that you haven't spoken to your father in 15 years. Like, this man gave you life. But he also taught me how to self-abandon. He also taught me how to silence myself. And for me, the impact of that, the residual impact of that, was life-threatening at the core, right? And it's not that I don't forgive. I still need ownership. I cannot just blatantly give you a piece of me when you can't take ownership of how your actions have impacted me.
It makes such a big difference. I remember my mom apologizing to me at one point, and it literally changed so much for me. And I didn't even feel like I didn't realize that I needed it until I got it. Because at that point we were close. I mean, my mom and I talk several times a day. We get along really, really well. Like I didn't think I needed that, but when I got it, it meant so much, just the acknowledgement. And a lot of what you're talking about is our attachment styles, right? And they do show up differently in different relationships. And they very much stem back to what your earliest experiences were. Like you were taught not to self-advocate. I was taught that love is not safe. I mean, that is what I learned not only from my parents and other family members, through friendships and through a series of relationships I have found. Even when I started therapy, I remember a therapist saying I had PTSD, and I'm like, no, and I'm so against all these labels. I'm like, look. And then I went to another therapist, and then I'm like, wow. These relationships left me with, I mean, I would have these nightmares and all these different things that I still have to this day. They're better, but I still have nightmares. And when that's when I realized that I wasn't ready to date yet. After my 10-year marriage, I started dating and things were going really well with somebody, and I started having nightmares again, and I started having panic attacks. And we were getting along great. I remember on one 5-hour date, literally a 5-hour date, we're at the bookstore and we're talking and all these things. And I had a panic attack and I was like, what is happening? And I'm like, I was terrified to fall in love again. And I, like you, I can cut things off even with romantic. Like early on, honey, it's so easy for me to never talk to you again. But once it's like, once you get past a certain level with me, once you just get in that little soft spot, it's over. And I think it's like all my guards are going up before you get there, because when you get in there, I'm putty. And so, but again, yeah. So it's recognizing what were we taught when we were young? Was it healthy? Does it serve us now? And if it didn't, how can we shift that internal dialogue and that narrative so that we can move into something healthier going forward?
Absolutely. And healthy, is absolutely the key. But oftentimes in our beginning stages of healing, we also reject it, right? I remember in between two abusive relationships, I met someone who By all definitions, was probably the most healthiest person that I had entered into a situation with. And I remember being so bored. What is going on? It felt like, first of all, it felt like everything was moving in slow motion because all of my other relationships were, very fast moving. I was love bombed. I was swept up into this imaginary world, but that wasn't happening over her, and I couldn't understand why it was moving so slow. And I remember someone I like saying to somebody, like, I don't understand, like, I don't even think this guy really likes me. And they're like, no, it's kind of normal. Like, I think what you're used to is not normal. But my body, I was so used to chaos that my body literally rejected this piece that was being presented. And I wish I knew how to process that back then, because I now recognize that that's exactly what I needed in that moment to anchor me into a space. But I rejected it and I moved on very quickly and ended up right in another chaotic relationship that this feels like home.
That is so true, right? And like I said, that was something I realized before I got with after the adult dangerous breaking in relationship before I got with, because my next relationship after that was the 10-year marriage. And he was so much calmer. I mean, we had our stuff, but just so much calmer. And I told him, coming off of that, I do not do the yelling, the screaming. We are going to disagree, and it's going to take some time to figure out how we can disagree in a healthy way. But this like outburst and then making up, I'm not doing all that. And even through our divorce, I'll tell you, even our divorce attorney said several times, he was like, this is almost unheard of. I mean, because we were, dividing assets and all these different things. And he was like, we don't, nobody comes in here agreeing like this. Like, yes, we needed an attorney because we needed things legally set up, but we figured it out together. Sat down, had a conversation, boom. Even a house that I literally just closed on, he co-signed on it for me. You know what I mean? Like, we both thank each other consistently for our flexibility, for our kindness, for our compassion. And the things that didn't work with him are things that I've been sitting with to figure out how do I not repeat that next time, right? But I'm like, sometimes I'm like, can things just be easier? Like, I feel like I've been through enough, Lord. But I'm like, at least they are moving in a healthier direction. And what I'm so proud of myself about doing, most importantly for me, has been completely changing that parental and child relationship. Like, what I had with my parents is opposite of what I have with my children. Daughter is 18. She came home and surprised me a few days ago. I mean, I was like, you don't need to get a tattoo, right? But she surprised me and got my name on her. We're like literally best friends. We spend holidays, I mean, every day because she lives with me, but like her birthday, she wanted to spend with me, right? So it's like at 18, New Year's Eve, we're doing vision boards. So I just really wanted to make sure that I showed up emotionally, mentally, physically at every game, every school event, so that they know they are loved, so that hopefully they do not repeat the same relationship patterns that I repeated or that I had.
And I think a lot of my rewriting is being done in the way that I parent as well, right? I homeschool my kids, and I love telling the story that before I taught them ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, I taught them emotions. And I now look at the way that they are able to articulate how they feel. They are able to self-advocate for themselves. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it gets under my skin.
Did I teach you this?
But the opposite of that was the young girl like me who couldn't advocate for herself, who was scared to speak her truth, who was scared to stand up for herself. And I love that although they are still very young, they are able to do that with confidence. And I hope that nothing strips them of that.
Yes.
But it certainly won't be me. It will
Yes.
not be me.
And you brought up actually a good point. I would tell my daughter and my son this a lot too, but my daughter's just older. And I said, honey, life is too short to learn all the lessons on your own, right? So, like, Yes, I've taught you a lot of beautiful things. I've given you what I can give, and I think I've given a great example in so many ways, but there are also going to be things about me that you look at and you're like, I don't want to be like that. And that is okay. While my mom and I are very close now, when I got pregnant with my daughter, I didn't have a frame of reference of, oh, I want this type of caregiver because I really had not experienced the love I needed. But I remember thinking I will be the opposite of what my mother was to me. Just felt so unloved. It was agony. I mean, at 8 years old, to be trying to take my own life, it was just absolute agony. And one thing my children never have to worry about or wonder is if I love them and if I'm going to be there for them. And in the good moments and in the hard ones, they call me and share all of that with me. And I am grateful that I was able to provide that, but I'm also able to tell them, like, hey, there's things about me. I mean, you don't want to go through the relationships I've gone through, right? So that too. So just learn from the people around you and say, I like this. Take what you like and leave the rest. You know, it can make your transition smoother. And I've seen both of my children having a level of emotional awareness that is beautiful. I get emails from my son's school all the time about him standing up for people that are being bullied. So parents have come up to me like, oh, he's my child's best friend. And it's because they know how to demonstrate love in a way that is not always taught. And mirrored and shown to children that young. Glad you're doing the work you're doing. I'm glad I'm doing the work I'm doing, because that's the most important thing, even these conversations, is changing it for the next generation.
Yeah, the small changes make a big impact. And while some may not understand, I certainly understand because, you know, I was raised in an era where children should be seen and not heard. And my children don't have to scream from the top of the rooftops to be heard. You know what I mean? They don't have to scream and yell or act out in ways to get attention. They are heard, they are seen, they are understood, and they are loved for who they are, not what I want them to be. And that's the change that I needed. That's the change that I needed so that I could have seen something different in life. So, Natasha, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Tell us a bit more about how we can connect with you online.
Oh yeah. Mainly right now I'm on Facebook. My kids tease me. They're like, Facebook is for old people. I'm like, whatever. I enjoy the conversations. But my last name is unique. So if you put in Natasha Ickes, you'll see me on Facebook. You'll see me on TikTok. You'll see my website. I have a book that I wrote that talks more about these relationships and my childhood growing up. And I have a book that's coming out in a few weeks called Healing While Black: Ancient Wisdom, Modern Psychology, and the Science of Healing. And while it doesn't specifically focus on everything we talked about today, it does talk about learning how to love yourself and how to heal through whatever you've been through, not only for yourself, but for every generation to come. So, any of those ways, I would love to connect with you guys and continue to have conversations and build connections.
Yeah, so we'll make sure all of that information is in the show notes. But before we wrap it all up, one key takeaway for the audience to action.
Learn how and learn how to love yourself. And that sounds so like broad, right? But I realized at one point that you can't outrun, outwork, outdrink, outsmoke, out whatever your pain and your trauma. You have to take the time and go within. And that journey looks so different for everybody, whether it's therapy, whether it's dancing, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, but you're going to have to learn how to be still and go within in order to heal those wounds and step into the next best, healthiest version of yourself that is just waiting to be unlocked.
Absolutely. It always sounds so cliche to say learn how to love yourself, but I mean, that is really the core of your healing. And in that, it's learning how to put yourself first as well. So I agree 100%. Thank you so much for your time, Natasha. I appreciate your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. And audience, thank you for catching another episode. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.
Yay.
Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Leticia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation it probably cracks something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison mask as strength. But here's the truth. You're not broken, you're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it, don't numb it, move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.